Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Thursday, January 7th, 2021, and this is episode 212 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and I want to wish a happy new year to my co-host, Eric Nathanson. How's it going, man?
My friend, Chad, it's going well. I hope happy new year to you as well. Hope you had a good holiday. Has your winter been well? Did you enjoy your holiday season?
Enjoyment now, it seems to be a relative benchmark, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. I mean, survival is enjoyment.
Yeah. I enjoy going out for just a short walk in the neighborhood because, you know, it's like, woohoo, got outside. We did something today. Like, actually going to the grocery store is kind of fun now because it's one of the few times I leave the house. You know, I still do my, like, CrossFit. We have outdoor classes. I do that a few times a week and go shopping and take walks. And that's about it. There's nothing much else that we do outside of the house. But, yeah, it was good to spend with the family, kids home from school. I took time off from work, so I didn't have to be on my computer all day. And, you know, I will say, though, that there's only so many board games and muffins and cakes you can bake and board games you can play in a day before you finally want to go retreat to your own den with a bottle of whiskey and just, like, be done with it. But
well, 'tis the season. I totally feel you on the cakes. I've been eating I ate my way through this holiday season. Every time I turned around, somebody had brought something home from a store trip that had, you know, sweets in it, like cupcakes or a cake or something like that. And then my wife started making cookies, and then mm-hmm. her daughter wanted to make cookies, and it just, you know, it snowballs from there. And yeah. So, you know, it was cool. I got to watch my one-year-old granddaughter open presents on Christmas morning, and she got the hang of opening presents, of, like,
awesome.
Pulling the wrapping paper. Right. So it, like, totally made it, like, such a cool, fun morning. And I was kind of the one that showed her how to, you know, pull the paper. So it made for, you know, a good Christmas morning and a holiday time. And then New Year's, personally, I fell asleep at 10 o'clock at night. I'm officially an old.
Yep. I love it. Yeah, we did do that while the kids were really, really young, but they're at the age now, 15 and 11, where the last few years they want to stay up till midnight. So unfortunately, their desire kind of has required us to be up until midnight. They're past the age which we can fool them with the East Coast feed to see them to go to bed just after 9, you know? So they love the party favors and the little poppers and the apple cider and, you know, do the whole thing. So we did that with them. And, you know, we were able to, well, I should say Santa was able to secure a PlayStation 5 for our kids. And they were just over the moon about it. My 11-year-old was just going crazy. I mean, and he's been playing the crap out of that Miles Morales game, which I have to admit is a lot of fun. But so I think they had a good Christmas. We had a good Christmas, you know, all in, things considered. You know, we got our jobs. We have our health. We're doing okay. A lot of the world is not, you know.
Yeah. So, and I hope our listeners had a good holiday and a good Christmas or whatever you celebrate, and everybody mm-hmm. is healthy where you are. Because, I mean, we made it through 2020. It's a new year. And, you know, we haven't recorded in a while because 2020 kind of ended the baseball season the way 2020 was going, with our least favorite team winning the World Series, because what else could happen in the middle of a pandemic? And we haven't recorded since then, and we haven't forgotten about you, listeners. There's just been a lot of life in the way since then. So we have to admit, we may have dropped the ball a little bit by not recording. But to be fair, as we go through the new moves, it's not like there's been a whole heck of a lot of fire to this hot stove so far.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, we knew what the World Series was going to be. So the only thing we neglected was talking about the Dodgers winning the World Series, and really, who wants to do that? And then, like you said, kind of a minimal assortment of signings that the Giants have made. So We're going to talk a little bit about that today, but I mean, might as well talk about the elephant in the room. And, you know, none of us are happy that the Dodgers won. I mean, I don't think we talked about this before. I know a lot of fans, Giants fans and other fans who hate the Dodgers, are saying it's not a real world championship. It's fake. It's whatever. They should get half a trophy, a mini trophy. You know, it doesn't really count, all these other things. And it's like, we talked about this before, and we have to give credit where credit is due. All 30 teams agreed to the shortened 60-game schedule. The playoffs, if anything, were actually harder this year because of that extra round in the beginning of a three-game series. That was an additional hurdle for the two final teams to go through. So technically, it was a harder challenge to go through the playoffs for the Dodgers than any other team prior to them. So
I mean,
you know,
it tripped up the number one seed in the American League, so it very well could have tripped up the Dodgers just the same.
It could have, absolutely. I mean, a three-game series, my God. I mean, the Dodgers have lost three-game series before, right, throughout the year. Not many, but they have. And it happens, and they made it through. And so, you know, the other thing I have to say about that is it's not like the Dodgers were the number eight seed and, you know, getting lucky and making it through. The only reason they got in was because of the expanded playoffs. No, they would have been the number one seed anyway. They would have won the NL West anyway. So, you know, all things considered, they didn't benefit from the shortened season. Everyone expected them. They had the best odds to win the World Series anyway. Everybody expected this. So it's, you know, you got to tip your hat and go, okay, they failed seven times in a row to win the World Series. And they finally won it on their eighth try. So the Giants, their percentage of success is a little bit better on that, you know, being 3-for-4 in the last four playoffs. So that's
yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah, they kind of had to stumble into one eventually. There's absolutely no question about that.
Yeah, you throw enough darts on the board, you're going to hit the bullseye once in a while. So, you know,
it's true. And that's the best way to look at it as a Giants fan. Like, it was bound to happen. So it happened. No big deal.
Yeah. It's just that now we got to hopefully not have one of those three-peat repeats happening, right? Or,
oh my God.
Or 3-5 like the Giants did. That's where it's really going to hurt. Because unfortunately, we'll get to it later. But I think the Dodgers are still going to be good for the next few years at minimum. So.
Yeah, but those Padres.
Yeah, we'll talk about those Padres too. They're definitely the Dodgers' little cousin that wants to win the battle right now. So yeah, the Giants, they have not done a whole lot this season, but or the off season so far. But it's kind of, you know, a couple things are happening right now, and we'll talk about the pandemic stuff a little bit later and how it may impact the start of the regular season and spring training. But that is on everyone's minds, is if the season doesn't start on time, is it going to be pushed back? Do they want to sign someone to a crazy deal when the season might be compromised, but they still have to pay the money? I mean, there's a lot of these issues coming out. And so it's really tempered the free agent season. It's very slow, basically. There definitely have been some big signings, but for the most part, everything's really, really slowed down, especially after the financial impact all 30 clubs suffered last year from the lack of revenue and all the other things. So the Giants fall into that category a little bit. That said, Farhan Zaidi tends to slow play it anyway, and obviously doesn't make big splashes, at least not with the Giants. So I think that's what we're left with.
Not for lack of trying, though. I mean, no. Let's be honest here. He went after
they were in the Bryce
Harper.
Yep. Absolutely.
He went all in, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're in on Trevor Bauer right now. You know, mm-hmm. When it comes to the financials, I read a great article from Bags on The Athletic about how the Giants are in a financial position better than pretty much any other club in baseball, including teams like the Cubs and the Yankees. And the Cubs, that's obvious. I mean, they're who the hell knows what the Cubs are doing. But The Giants are in such a strong place financially that they might be able to pay some contracts that other teams can't because they're ahead of the debt that the teams accrued during 2020 without getting ticket sales and things like that. Because the Giants ballpark is paid off, because they don't have a lot of like creditors and they're basically swimming in money, they're right. One of the teams that could benefit. So, you know, some of these under the radar moves, but there could still be the splash out there is really the point I'm getting to, is Farhan could look to sign somebody like a Trevor Bauer. And especially after signing somebody like Kirk Casale, just the other day, to be the backup catcher, you know, trying to woo the guy that he caught last year in Cincinnati when he won a Cy Young award isn't too bad of an idea either.
No, it's not a bad idea at all. And Trevor Bauer himself, in one of those articles or one of his blogs or videos, identified top 10 teams and the Giants were kind of on that list. And I know part of it is tongue in cheek and he's just trying to, get clicks, but at the same time, if it's legitimate, it's like, okay, well, maybe the Giants are a consideration for him. Now, granted, he's going to command a ridiculous salary, so that's going to be part of the equation too. And you always have teams like the Dodgers and other superpowers that are, you know, going to go all in on this too. But that's why I say
the Giants apparently can weather that better than other teams. Even the Dodgers are financially at a like a 12% debt percentage or something right now against their assets, and the Giants don't have any of it. Literally, they have none on their ledger as compared to other teams. It was eye-opening to read that. So, you know, who knows? I'm just saying to Giants fans, don't count out the possibility of a big signing, but, I mean, there really isn't anybody left. You know, after Bauer, who are we looking at? Huge on the free agent market.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to get to that later. We got some needs I think the Giants have, and I think we can kind of go down those lists. I have a nice list here on this link for current free agents by position, so we can kind of isolate it like that. But I did want to go through.
I see the link now. Okay.
Yeah, I did want to go through the Giants' offseason moves, and this is a long list. I've removed a lot of it. Some of it's still probably a little too superfluous, but we're just going to go kind of in reverse order. So from the most recent to you know, after the end of the season. But you just spoke of him. Our most recent signing was a free agent catcher, Kurt Casale. And, you know, okay, not bad. You know, backup catcher, whatever. They had also, we'll get to this later, had re-signed Chadwick Tromp, so they have him in the system still. So they got three catchers now. They got Posey, Casale, and Tromp. But looking at his 7 years of service, he came up, made his major league debut in 2014 with the Rays. Signed with Cincinnati in 2018, and so he had 4 seasons with the Rays, 3 seasons with the Reds. Overall, not, you know, completely impressive, a career batting average of .230, you know. But yeah. I will say most of that bat average is with the Rays. He hit .199 with the Rays, but he hit .260 the last 3 years with the Reds. .293, .251, and .224. Unfortunately, he's trending downward, so that's not good to see either. But
well,
again,
apparently he worked with Donnie Ecker, who works with the Giants now, in Cincinnati for 2 years, and then Ecker came to the Giants, and that's when his batting went up with the .293 and the .251 batting average when he first got there. And I like this signing because they secure themselves a backup catcher a la Stephen Vogt. Mm-hmm. It gives them the opportunity to option Chadwick Tromp up and down from the minors if they need to. And Joey Bart gets to just stay in the minors to start so he can iron out what's going on. This was one of those sneaky good deals by Farhan, which I think we're going to say about 3 or 4 of these moves.
No doubt about it. He's I think he's, you know, decent signing. On the same day, January 4th, they did release pitcher Andrew Suarez. I don't think he's been picked up by anyone since then. You know, another guy that, you know, we've seen around the Giants system for the last few years or even longer, just never really made that impact that a lot of people were hoping. So, you know, Zaidi has no qualms with, you know, giving guys chances. And if you don't perform over a certain amount of time, it's kind of like, all right, we know what this pony does and it's not going to change. So we're just going to release you. On the 21st of December, they did sign free agent pitcher John Brebbia. He's a relief pitcher that was formerly with the Cardinals, 3 years of experience. I shouldn't say only. He has 175 innings under his belt over 3 years with a 3.14 ERA. Really good numbers, pretty solid. Last year, he ticked up a little bit in 72 innings as a 3.59 ERA. His whip was 1.183. So, you know, you'd like to see those numbers a little bit lower as a reliever, but at the same time, I think he's going to give a lot of that flexibility. He is a righty. So, you know, I think he's a solid bullpen guy.
It looks like he was most effective in 2017 when he was averaging 4.64 strikeouts per walk, because that dropped all the way down to 3.22 strikeouts per walk. And you got to wonder if the league like figured him out a little bit, and so the scouting was ahead on him. So the Giants, I'm looking at that stat thinking the Giants have to figure that's the stat that they can probably try to correct and to make him back into his 2017 form, because it does look like, I mean, it's like you said, his ERA is 3.14, but it's risen each of the last 3 seasons, and he didn't pitch in 2020.
It was 2019. He had Tommy John surgery. So that's one of the things that people are, you know, again, it depends on how a player comes back, but some players come back even stronger after Tommy John. And notably relievers tend to do that. So I said last year, you're right. Thanks for correcting me. It was 2019. He didn't pitch in 2020 because of the Tommy John surgery, but his strikeout per nine did rise slowly over those 3 seasons to 10.8, but at the same mark, his walks per nine went from 1.9 to 2.8 to 3.3. And that gives you that ratio you were just talking about of the 3.22. So, you know, you hope that the Giants are going to be able to work on his control a little bit, because it sounds like, or it looks like, he's definitely increased his either velocity or movement to increase those strikeouts. But at the same time, his accuracy has dipped as a result. And then there's more walks, and a lot more of those walks are scoring. That raises his ERA, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, I think it's a good signing. It's a solid signing. I don't think there's any problem with it. So, yeah, because his hits per nine have kind of stayed the same. So it really, I think, is the walks that's been the key for driving up his ERA a little bit. Even his home runs per nine went down.
Yeah, so they're not necessarily making more contact. It's just that he's missing the zone.
Yeah. And then the 16th, they signed a free agent right-handed pitcher Anthony Disclafani, or Fani. I always mess up his name. Disclafani, Fani. He's you know, also pitched with the Reds. He's got a long minor league journey behind him before he cracked into the big leagues. He's had a cup of coffee with the Marlins in 2014, again with the Reds in 2015, 2016. You know, 184 innings, 123 innings, 2018. But again, he's been up and down so much until really 2019 and 2020. He finally started spending some time not in the minor leagues, although in 2020 he did only have 33 innings pitched. I personally don't know what happened last year. I did not look into that, if he was injured or what. Granted, short the season, but his ERA last year was a whopping 7.22 in 33 innings pitched. Again, he's a starter, so, you know, they need more starting depth, and he can play right into that, you know, 4 or 5 slot if need be, especially the way the Giants have kind of gone through the injury bug the last couple of years with their starters.
Yeah, he's supposed to be this year's Kevin Gausman, so we'll see if it plays out the same way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. All right, move on.
Sure.
Should I rip through these, or should I bounce on down to they re-signed Chadwick Tromp after releasing him?
Yeah, you could bounce down, yeah.
They signed a free agent right-handed pitcher. Matt Wisler is another one that I've heard and read is a decent signing, a good bullpen piece, much like a Brebbia, to try to solidify the bullpen. They did that back on December 8th. On the 4th of December, they re-signed Melvin Adon and Rico Garcia on the 3rd and invited them to spring training. And so far, who'd they lose? Chris Shaw is a name that we can note that they lost. Chris Shaw was claimed by the Baltimore Orioles. And Aramis Garcia was claimed by the Texas Rangers. Both of those happening on November 25th. Wow, that was a while ago now.
I know, right?
And then the other kind of big moves that the Giants made within back on the 11th of November, they re-signed Kevin Gausman, which I think we talked about and both saw coming as a distinct possibility. I don't have his stats in front of me, but we both know he showed a solid year last year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He had a very solid year. He was I think clearly their best pitcher last year. So they needed him, and I know he was being entertained by the Yankees and others, and he ultimately decided to sign with the Giants, and he said he wanted to be here. So it's always good when a player wants to be somewhere, even if they might have gotten the same or more money or longer contract elsewhere. So, but that's about it so far, Eric. So it's not...
Yeah, there's none of the other ones I skipped over are names that, like, are known in any stretch of the imagination. Exactly. I mean, this one other, Jason Vossler, third baseman, you know, we're going to talk about how utility infielder is a possibility. Apparently, he could fit that prototype as well from everything I remember reading back then, because, you know, people have to remember, this is a podcast buying for the fans. And as a fan, I read about Jason Vossler when they signed him. Mm-hmm. But that was 2 months ago. So it's not as fresh in my memory anymore.
No doubt. Other teams that have been making big splashes, even though the overall free agent market has been kind of quiet, the Padres. The Padres have gone all in. We saw them go partially in last year, the last couple of years. Obviously, you started with Machado, and it's kind of accelerated from there. But you had them successfully getting both Yu Darvish and Blake Snell in trades with the Cubs and the Rays. And oh my God, dude, like, that's insane. They got Darvish and Snell, 40% of the rotation. And they already had a good rotation. And that spells trouble for the NL West. Obviously, they're trying to dethrone the Dodgers, but they made the playoffs last year. And, you know, they made a good run of it until they ran into the Dodgers. But this doesn't bode well for the Giants. The Giants are, you know, still trying to struggle just to be a 500 team. And you got the up-and-coming Padres that finally broke through last year. And now they've only gotten better. And, yeah, this isn't good because they are in the damn division. So yeah. Whenever you add to a team, it generally takes away from another team, you know, in terms of an extra win means an extra loss potentially for the Giants, that kind of thing. So it's frustrating, but, you know, that's the nature of baseball. The Giants had their moment in the sun, a very long moment in the sun from 2010 to really 2016. It was a good 6-7 year run. And you know, they've fallen on hard times, and that's just the nature of the beast. But, and you know, maybe this is the Padres' turn. Who knows? But, you know, I don't want to paint all doom and gloom Giants fans. I still think they're going to be competitive this year. I think they could absolutely, reach 500. And one thing we weren't going to go into depth about today, because we don't know what the agreement's going to be in terms of playoffs for the 2021 season, even if there's going to be a DH, right, is the fact that if there are expanded playoffs like last year, that significantly increases the Giants' chances of getting in when you expand the playoff field. So if we do have expanded playoffs, then, you know, I'd say look what happened in the 60-game season. The Giants were in it all the way down to the last game, and they missed it by one. Well, technically they were tied, but they missed it by one game. And they just lost based on a record, head-to-head record. That's it. So, you know, still that possibility the Giants are going to be in the playoffs
this year. Which won't be a possibility next year because they'll play it out on the field. They won't play it out, or I would assume, you know, they would play it out on the field instead of going to tiebreakers, because we won't hopefully be in the middle of a pandemic come September of next of this year. Of this year. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, of this year. I know, right? It's a little weird, so... but yeah, anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. Just seeing, you know, the Dodgers are still as good or better than they were last year. They made a couple of good, bullpen signings. And the Padres got tremendously better.
Padres are signings. Fun, man.
They're a fun team.
I said it to you earlier. I would love to root for them. I rooted for them in the playoffs. I would love to root for them, but they're in the Giants division. You know, you wish they were like an American League West team or something like that. And the funny thing is for the Padres, is for years and years, they tried to get over the hump of the Giants and they couldn't. And now they have to try to get over the hump of the Dodgers. It's like they're destined to be that kid brother, that little cousin, that runt that's told that he's not good enough. And they're trying to overcome it. I mean, between Machado and the young kids with Tatis, and then now the rotation with Snell and Darvish being added to the mix, it's just kind of ridiculous what they've got going there. I think that it's going to be fun to watch Padres games. I really look forward to watching Padres games next year. I do. And, it brings me to, because Yu Darvish, that came out of nowhere. I really did not expect that. And I don't know what the Cubs are doing, man. As the resident Cubs expert, I don't know what the F they're doing. I really don't. They are just apparently stripping it down. I wouldn't be shocked if Chris Bryan is traded at some point. It just suddenly seems like, okay, Theo stepped down, so we're going to try to do a completely different thing. And I don't know, man. They have a ton of talent, so I don't understand trading away a guy like Yu Darvish. I mean, how do you trade away, especially in your own league? Uh-huh. If the Cubs want to be competitive, they might run into him in a playoff series and have to face him twice now. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Why would you want to set yourself up for that?
No, and both him and, you know, Snell, obviously we had the, you know, Snell incident in which we never got to talk about because we hadn't recorded since before the World Series. But that amazing game against the Dodgers in which he was pulled after giving up one hit after eight or whatever it was. And, you know, it was unfortunate. It was a move that everyone criticized. But, you know, he's a great pitcher, is a pretty solid mind. He's you know, puts his foot in his mouth once in a while. But, you know, good for the Padres. Yeah. You know, good for the Padres. And so that kind of reflects to the slow free agent market, besides those couple of signings, into what the Giants still can do. They do definitely have some room in their budget. They're going to have a lot more next year when a lot of these mega contracts the Giants signed, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago with your Crawford and Belt and Posey are going to be all off the books. And that's why I wonder if they're just going to sit tight and they're going to make these traditional small signings, fill in holes here and there, and wait it out until next year. And I don't have next year's bumper crop of free agents up, so I couldn't tell you who's going to be available next year. I haven't thought that far. But let's concentrate on this year's lot of free agents. And again, a lot of uncertainty about the season, if it's going to start on time, how many seasons, you know, how many games are going to be, what are the playoffs going to look like. That really goes into a lot of the calculus of all of the teams. But I'm sure it goes in, because Aidy is such a numbers guy, right? That's going to completely play into what is our chance of making the playoffs? How many games are we going to play? Are we going to have a DH? These are all things that go into those you know, equations, both subjective and literal equations that they run. So it'll be interesting. Now, I would say off the top, you know, the Giants outfield has always been weak. Ever since Barry Bonds left, they just haven't ever had that super solid guy out there. I mean, don't get me wrong, Mike Yastrzemski fills that role now, but they still have these gaps in the outfield. And so I'd say that's one glaring need. Obviously, every team can use extra starting pitching and relievers, and the Giants really suffered in that relief department in the first half of last year when they were just giving up every game late. I know they solidified and things calmed down at the end of the year, but I think that's another hole they have to fill, at least have some depth. And then, of course, everyone needs utility infielders, but the Giants have, I guess, been doing okay in that role, except the fact that they have sometimes utility infielders playing in their starting positions. So that could be part of the problem. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm looking at this list of all the free agents by positions, and the outfield list just doesn't fill me with any like, oh, that's the guy. George Springer has the biggest WAR out of any outfielder who's a free agent. And right. As I said earlier, he's got that stank on him, and I'm not sure I'd want to sign a guy like that from Houston. But, you know, if he became on your team, we'd all end up having to root for him. You know, everybody out there, it's kind of like everybody's over 30, obviously, because you don't really become a free agent until you're 30 in Major League Baseball. But, like, Puig's still an intriguing guy. I could see something like that happening if he's still out there. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I can't see them filling the outfield position. It's starting pitching where they've got to find one more arm. And there's a ton of, like, intriguing names, but no – you know, other than Trevor Bauer, there's no name that jumps out at you. And I mentioned Bauer and how Casale said, he said it in his Zoom call. He's like, if I am instructed to woo Trevor Bauer, I will do so. And so I think, you know, that lends some credence, I guess, to it because he caught him last year. But I mean, there's interesting guys out there. There's like Odorizzi and Adam Wainwright, I guess, John Lester, late in his career. You know, do they take a flyer on one of those guys? Somebody right. like Jose Quintana. You know, you don't want to go out and get a Tyler Chatwood, but you know, it's the Mike Leakes of the world that are out there right now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, it's a hole that needs filled. So I think they'll fill it with one of these guys. I just don't know, you know, which guy it's going to be necessarily.
Yeah, you look at the outfield list, and you really pointed it out. I mean, the average age is certainly a little over 30, right? It's probably like 32 or something like that. But
that's what it looks like, yeah.
It does. And you're right. A lot of these guys, you know, these days don't break into the major leagues until they're, you know, mid-20s, and then they're, you know, restricted for the first 4 or 5 years until they can start hitting the big money. So typically you are about 29, 30 before you really can hit the free agent market with some lucrative deals. But, yeah, I mean, like besides George Springer in center field, you know, no one really jumps out at you. I mean, you have your old ones. You have your Billy Hamilton and Kevin Pillar available. We've been been down that road before, right? You got Jared Dyson at 36 years old. I mean, yeah, you look at this list, and it's not inspiring at all. Right fielders, besides Puig, of course, which that has its own baggage. You got, you know, aging guys like Josh Reddick and Nick Markakis that are, you know, on the other side of the hill. Eduardo Nunez, of course. Again, nothing really sticks out from that list. Left fielders, I don't know. You didn't mention Brantley, but, you know, he's 34. He's a good, solid guy, but he's also DH'd a lot. You know, and that's the problem, is that he would have to be a full-time outfielder.
As you said, we don't know if the DH is going to be there or not. Although, you were about to say Jock. I would say Jock or Schwarber. I would honestly take either Jock or Schwarber on the Giants at this point. Jock, way more so.
I would definitely, Kyle's just got so many holes in his swing. I mean, he's a prolific home run hitter, but, you know, Jock definitely seems to be a more rounded person. Of course, it again is weird when, you know, either a former Dodger or Giant signs with their rivals, but it does happen. It is a business.
I mean, he'd be perfect. Can't you see Jock laying bombs into the Bay? I mean, he would love playing for his hometown team.
Well, you know, he's on the LA with the prolific number of outfielders. It was hard for him to be starting every day because Dave Roberts was always swapping out, you know, outfielders. Like, you're going to be on the bench today. And if he came to San Francisco, he'd have an everyday job. There's no doubt about that. I think that would be. But, of course, that's probably the same with, you know, a dozen other teams, right? So it's not like just the Giants need an outfielder. You got old favorites like Adam Duvall, who, again, been there, done that. An interesting one, I thought, even though he's old and over the hill, is Ryan Braun. And he wouldn't necessarily be serving in an everyday starting role, but if they could get him for a relative bargain, I think that could go a long way in terms of, you know, some of his veteran leadership and ability to come off the bench when he's, you know, taking days off, kind of thing. I don't think they're going to go down that road.
I think the DH is what kills that. If there's no DH next year, I think that kills that possibility.
Yep, I agree. And then same with the old nemesis, Jay Bruce, as well. I actually thought he was older than that. He's 34. I thought he was like 36, 37. He's just been around so long.
He's only been in the league, 12 years? Really? It hasn't been 25?
I never forget that battle with Sergio Romo against the Reds in the 2012 playoffs. Woo-hoo, boy. That was one of the most intense at-bats I can remember. That was insane.
It's great though that the moment you say that, it evokes the image in my head of that battle, and Giants fans can all relate to that. You know, it's great that we have those memories and things like that of like Sergio, and you know, like that was a nice little memory to drop in there. We're so spoiled. Sorry, I know
it's true. Again. We're complaining about good things, and we recognize it. We recognize it. So that's about it for outfielders. So like you said, I mean, there's not a lot to really spend a lot of money on. And I wouldn't spend a lot of money. I wouldn't overpay for any of these guys. No. And without really looking at next year's class of what's going to be available, I can't say if they should just hold it because of that or hold it because of the lack of talent this year. But that said, there's probably a couple guys in there they could sign that would help a little bit. But let's be real, Eric. None of these guys are going to bring them to the promised land. That's not what we're looking at. This is just another layer of icing on the cake. It's just a tiny little bit that they might need. That's about it. There's not much else they can do.
Yeah, that's the key right there. There's not much else they can do, which is why, you know, they're going to get a look with young guys when it comes to the relief staff. You know, there'll be some guys who are on their last option that need to prove themselves that'll be trying to get bullpen jobs. And they'll always be minor league free agents brought in. And that's all that they can. And that's what Farhan's MO is, though. That is to find these little gems in the rough. And they flourish under his guidance somehow. I mean, I got to say, the structure that's been put in place. I was reading Casale's about Casale and why he chose the Giants. And he said that just everyone from the coaching staff on down, he's like, they're just all feel like they're moving in the same direction. They're all good people that he wants to work with. It was good to hear that the inside of the Giants clubhouse still does sound like a good place, as opposed to, you know, sometimes when it wasn't necessarily the best of places. I mean, under Bochy, it was a great place. At the end, there was some rockiness. But it's good to hear that the Giants are still an organization players want to play for. So, you know, those guys that might have that little spark in them are going to come and play for the Giants. And, you know, that could propel them. Expand to playoffs? That could propel them into the playoffs somehow, yeah. Some way. I mean, it doesn't mean they'll do anything. They'll be like my Bears and be fodder.
By the way, I think that's the largest spread of the first round of playoffs, isn't it?
It is, and I couldn't bring myself to bet it. I wanted to so bad. Not my Bears, I would have bet the Saints.
Oh my God!
I wanted to. I said it out loud last Sunday when the Bears game ended. I said, just put all your money on whoever the Bears play next week, and New Orleans is a fine, fine choice. I went the other direction. I bet on two underdogs so I can get a big payday if they win. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to mention who they are because I don't want to jinx myself.
You don't want to jinx yourself. Yeah, talk about a tale of two teams and two seasons in 1 year. That's
definitely
the Bears. I know.
I would rather have had the Niners problems this year. You know, I really so much.
Yeah, sorry for the segue, but I will say this as a very devout Niner fan. Certainly not as much as my Giants passion. But that said, you know, to be so close to the promised land last year, have that 10-point lead, you know, with whatever, 6 minutes to go in the game. You know, that was one of the ultimate, just horrific ways to lose a Super Bowl with a couple of dumb plays like that. And then to go, okay, they're just going to be right back at it this year. And it was like they had freaking snipers up in their practice facility because everybody went down. Everybody went down. It was ACLs everywhere. ACLs and Achilles everywhere. Just pew, 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 pew. You know, with Bosa to Garoppolo to everybody, and it just decimated their team. You know, it was bad, and so they went into the season already with just not having a roster, basically. So right. I resigned myself, like you said, going, okay, there's nothing they can do this year. They're just shot. They're literally shot. So and then they won what, 5 games, 6 games this year. It's like, you know, if they had all those guys, I think they absolutely would have won 8 or 9 and been in the playoffs, let alone 10 or 11. But that said, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's, you know, it's just like, worse. Let's just regroup. Let's go back to 2021. Let's just go.
Right. No. Now I have to entertain talk about Mitch Trubisky being a real quarterback and will the Bears re-sign him? And then, oh, my God, Matt Nagy's job is safe now that they won 3 straight to secure the playoff berth, which just blows my mind because I think mm-hmm. the guy is horrible as a head coach. But it is so frustrating to watch knowing that your team is hurtling toward mediocrity with the caveat that they're going to keep everybody in place who perpetrated that mediocrity. Right. And it's so hard to watch all the time. We're used to 8-8, 7-9, 6-10 seasons. That's just how it is as a Bears fan, you know, and that's why it looks like the Giants. I'm like, the expanded playoffs, the Bears got in as the 7th seed. So, hey,
if
the baseball playoffs were to expand, the Giants really would have that opportunity as one of those teams right around 500 who, if you make a late charge, all of the Bears winning those 3 straight against crap teams. But that's the whole point. If you're playing against, you know, bad competition in September, you're going to get hot at the right time to make the playoffs. So the Giants, it is just because the Padres have gotten better, just because the Dodgers are the reigning world champs, it does not count the Giants out for 2020, 2021. It does not count them out for this year at all.
No.
And you know, as we're about to talk about, we don't even know if things will start on time. We don't even know if there's going to be a 162-game season. There's a lot that needs to come together just to have any of this start happening again.
Yeah. So I wanted to kind of recap everything. I'm going to basically do some reading off of Bleacher Nation. I think they did a good job just about 4 days ago putting out kind of the summary of status and where it lies right now in terms of the season. Now, one thing I think, despite the coronavirus exploding right now, and it's the worst it's ever been, baseball kind of showed that they could play a partial season during a pandemic. Now, granted, the time in which they played, the cases and the transmission was much, 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 much lower than it is right now. However, the NBA is back in session, and the NFL has successfully completed its regular season. Granted, they had, and it was a full season. Granted, they had a COVID-19 list, and there were many, many teams that were compromised by players being on that restricted list going into games, especially at the last second, too. That was so bizarre to see, like, teams going, whoop, this guy and this guy and this guy were exposed, so they got a quarantine. And you're like, dude, the game's tomorrow, you know? And that just, that's the way it was. So I will say I think it's possible. I don't know if it's responsible to do it, but it is certainly possible. And baseball certainly is a far less of a contact sport than football, although we know about the disease now. It really isn't about that. It's about being in the same airspace as someone for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. Point being, will spring training and the season start on time? Will it have 162 games? And so I'm going to quote some of this article. So, quote, "As we've made clear to the league on multiple occasions, we expect spring training and the regular season to start on time and as scheduled, consistent with our collective bargaining agreement," the Players Association said in a statement. Quote again, "The league does not have the authority or legal basis to unilaterally delay or shorten the season without players' consent. While there will continue to be challenges, our players have proven they can safely play a season under difficult circumstances, as have other sports. The commissioner's office has assured us that they have instructed the clubs to prepare for an on-time start," end quote. So that's the Players Association basically saying, we have to agree to any delay. We don't want to lose out on money again this year. So other teams are doing, or sorry, other leagues are doing it. We're going to do it. And then again, from the article, "With baseball having been successfully played during the pandemic and with other sports theoretically showing the same this winter, MLB's owners would have a much weaker argument now than they did last March to say that games cannot be played right now due to a national emergency, and thus the players have to accept a shorter season and less pay." And we went through this last year where this is, you know, they shut everything down in March and they, you know, didn't start a season until July because so much was unknown about everything about this pandemic, let alone the transmissibility, how people are going to die, our players going to die and pass it around, our family's going to be, and, you know, there were so many unknowns, and it was a national emergency that MLB was within their rights to basically say, look, we got to shut this shit down. And, you know, it's understandable. So what they're saying now, of course, is like, well, we played a 60-game season. NBA did it. NFL's doing it during the worst part of the pandemic. So you can't use that excuse anymore. You can't say it's a national emergency.
NFL is what really killed them because they played a full entire
season. Yeah, full entire season. Now, in the owner's perspective, this is what they did not want, right? Because they were able to cut the players' paychecks last year, prorated to roughly a third of their normal salaries. And that softened the blow from the lack of having any ticket sales. This year, they're clearly, in most cases, most stadiums, not going to be able to host fans for some time. We don't know how long it's going to be, but certainly your traditional start April 1st of the season. Let's say, for example, all California teams, I cannot imagine a scenario in which they're having fans in on April 1st. And that's going to be true with many other states as well. Not all states, but many states. So you're going to set up a scenario again where you have owners that are like, well, crap, if we start on time and as the pandemic starts to fizzle out, more people get vaccinated. And like you said, hopefully by playoff time, it's kind of getting in the rearview mirror. It's not going to be over. It's not going to be over, but it's going to be less dangerous then, less transmissible then, more people going to be vaccinated. They're not going to shut down in September if they're not shutting down in April, right? Because it's only going to get better. So the prospects of a full 162-game season are right there. And if they start in April, that means they're going to pay these salaries, full salaries to all these players, but they're not going to have the ticket revenue. And the owners don't want that. The owners want the excuse to delay the start of the season so they will have fewer games played without fans, and they will therefore lose less money. And my, you know, if they played an 80% season, they pay 80% salaries. So you can already see this could be an issue where the owners are really going to push for a delay to the start of the season, but the players have all of the cards, I'd say, this time, because they're going to go, nope, NFL did it, NBA did it, we did it last year, so screw you. As long as we stay safe and there isn't a crazy outbreak, we're playing. We're playing on time and we're doing this. Give us our money because we don't care if there's no ticket sales. We signed a contract and you owe us the money. You have insurance for that, right? So that's what they're going to do. It's interesting. So if the season is indeed to be played as normal, this is back to the article, and if teams are already expecting that to happen, then you'd have all the more reason to expect certain teams to keep the players spending very tight. Consider that if spring training happens as scheduled, it'll be without fans in attendance, a significant revenue hit to a team like the Cubs. I don't know why they threw that in there. It's true, though. With many teams.
Well, it's a Cubs blog. That's Brett Taylor. That's a Cubs
blog.
Oh,
thanks. I appreciate that. Moreover, if opening day starts on April 1st, then at least 2 months of the regular season is also likely to be played with no fans in some states and very limited fans in others. Again, for a team like the Cubs, blah, blah. So, yeah, the owners have already suggested via media that they'd like to delay the start of the season to accommodate more vaccinations for the players and staff.
What does that mean? Yeah. They're going to open up the stadium so that everybody can come get vaccinated? Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure the owners
fund the vaccinations so we can all come watch baseball and put money in their pockets.
I'm sure the owners' number one concern is the safety players or the safety of the players and staff and the vaccination. We should delay the start of the season to make sure everyone's vaccinated. Has nothing to do with empty stadiums and not getting ticket revenue. Nothing at all. So, it's going to be interesting, man. But you know, the way it sounds right now, with the vaccine now finally starting to be rolled out, I don't know if they're going to enable, this would be an outrage to the public. We had this issue last year. Remember, testing was so scarce and hard to find. They contracted a company and paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars to do their own testing. They cannot contract a company to produce their own vaccines, right, for major
leagues.
That's
a good point.
It's limited to what is supplied by currently Moderna and Pfizer, and there will be others coming on board after FDA approval later. But that said, those first, you know, millions and millions of lots are going to the first responders, to the vulnerable, to the sick, to the retirement homes, to those kinds of people. If they start spring training just about a month from now, 5 weeks from now, they're still not going to have all of those people vaccinated, the first responders, the frontliners, the sick and the elderly. So I don't see any scenario in which, without great consternation and, you know, pissing people off, where players and staff and coaches, unless they have a medical condition, are going to be able to get this vaccine. So I think they're going to have to start spring training and most likely maybe the beginning of the season without the vast majority of their staff and players being vaccinated. And so that is a concern, and there could be outbreaks and all those kinds of things. But again, they proved that they could kind of do this in a 60-game season. NFL's kind of done it. You know, and I say kind of because it's not 100% effective, right? You know, people still got it. But it wasn't like 55 guys on a team went down at the same time, you know? No one that we know of has directly died as a result of it. So we were worried that, you know, some bench coach was going to drop dead, right?
Yeah, exactly. One of the old guys was going to get caught in the cycle.
Yeah, and that has not, you know, happened, at least not demonstrably. So, I don't know, based on all that information and your crystal ball, do you think that spring training and the season are going to start on time and we're going to have a full season?
I do, because I think the players will force it. I think that you're dead on with them holding all the cards. And like I said, the NFL is just the example of it. It is the perfect example. They got all 256 games in. And baseball, that's similar. It's a series games. You know, you can count a series as a game. And the teams got themselves, they got everything in. So if they can do it, then why can't Major League Baseball? You know, if they need to rearrange the schedule so teams stay in certain areas for longer, then do that. If they need to rearrange the schedule so that teams only do play certain teams and they don't necessarily play interleague or something like that, you know what I mean? Like the NHL is doing, because granted, the NHL is doing it because their Canadian teams can't travel. But what they've done is they've separated into four divisions, and the division is only playing itself during the regular season, much like baseball last year. And so, you know, they could come up with a modified version of that if they need to for this season, because we do all still understand that there is a pandemic going on. And September, yeah, certain things will be in the rear view, but not enough, because let's face it, baseball players, they're low on the list of guys who are in line for the vaccine. You know, I'm low on the list. I'm 41 and out of shape, and I'm low on the list of guys who are in line for the vaccine. You know, these guys are 25-year-old, well-oiled machines. You're telling me that they're higher on the list than I am to get this vaccine? I mean, maybe because they use their body for their work, and I don't. But that's the only reason I can think of. So yeah. It's like you said, there's not some magic vaccine that the owners can just gather up and use. So I think with the blueprint of last season that they are going to have to start this season on time. I think that they'll start with empty ballparks. I think we'll get ballparks in Texas with fans in them. Ohio might have fans in them. But I see places like New York, Chicago, California still not having fans in the building. And, you know, like you said, the players don't care about that. They really, really don't. I signed a contract. It's not based on whether or not you make ticket sales specifically. So I don't think there's a way the owners can hold it up. I think the real scare comes next year when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement. They gotta redo. I think this year they should be able to get off without a hitch. But, you know, I'm both hopeful and optimistic that a season starts on time.
Yeah, agreed. I think next year is going to be very interesting because if they do play a full season and the owners lose a ton of cash from, you know, a third of the season without ticket revenue or even more, they're going to go into that CBA negotiation saying that. They're going to say, hey, look, guys, you know, we bore the brunt of it. You guys made 100% of your salaries. We didn't. So we're going to have to negotiate on this and this and this and this more in our favor. And that really could mess things up because the players, again, at that time are still not going to go, oh, we feel sorry for you. That means you're still asking us to sacrifice. That wasn't our problem. Again, you guys have insurance. You guys own the business. These are the perils of owning a business. You signed us to a contract. We're not going to modify our future contract potential based on making up your lost billions. That's not going to happen. So you could have an impasse next year. But until we get to that point, yeah, I think so. I think a month ago, I wasn't so sure, but seeing the NFL kind of complete its regular season, the NBA starting up again, you know, and knowing that, yeah, things are going to get worse for the pandemic here for January and into February for sure, because we're going to still have the second spike coming from, it might be the 18th spike by now, from the holidays. After that, I see it starting to attenuate, right? Partially because of weather, partially because of more distancing, and partially, of course, mainly because of the vaccine. So, I think things are only going to get better throughout the year. So if they can play the NFL and they played the MLB last year, yeah, why can't they start? So I think
there's no reason. It doesn't make any sense. The public outcry would be just far too great, I think.
It would be so. But it'll be interesting to see what some of these select owners will bring up, you know. But All right.
I did not mean to get the motorcycle in the background, folks, but that is a Harley Davidson that my neighbor got for Christmas. I am a bit jealous.
Nice. Very nice. All right.
I'm a bit jealous, but he's got good timing since we're wrapping up and at the end of our show here.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it for episode 212. I don't know exactly when we're going to be back because, again, things are very slow in the free agent market. I don't anticipate us recording next week unless something happens. So I know you guys, some of you really like the podcast, and we just, you know, really want to thank you for your continued patronage. We know it's free and everything, but the fact that you guys keep coming back is says volumes to us. We've been around for, you know, this is our 11th year of the podcast now, believe it or not, which is crazy. Wow. Yeah, we started, it was June of 2011. So it'll be a 10-year anniversary this June, but this is our 11th season that we've, you know, covered. So pretty crazy. You know, that's a significant chunk of time in Giants history and pretty decent for a podcast. So we thank you for that. So that said, Eric and I will be in constant touch whenever things happen. We'll try to set up a schedule or whatever. But this happens every offseason. We generally, when you go back through our archives, have only recorded anywhere between 2 and 5 episodes during the offseason. So it's never a frequent podcast time for us.
Well, we're not like a breaking news podcast. I think, exactly. Our listeners understand that we like to analyze and talk about the games, and why things are going wrong and what needs to be better. We concentrate on that as fans and as ex-ball players ourselves. I think that's why we'll always side with the ball players in anything, you know, and that's why we always look at what the ball players are doing. And, you know, the news around the ball players is, I don't want to say less interesting to me, but, you know, I guess it is. It is kind of less interesting to me than what the players are actually doing on the field. Like, yep. It kind of, you know, I'm kind of the guy that says, okay, you know, who's our team? Who are we going to battle with this year? Let's figure out what these guys' strengths are and figure out what these guys' weaknesses are. And so, you know, we do appreciate that not being a breaking news and being a pretty much analysis podcast, that people still hang around and, you know, give value to what we have to say, because sometimes I don't get that in my own house. So I appreciate podcast listeners for being out there to make my ego stay in check.
I do want to announce one new project that I'm involved in. The founder of TortureCast, Willie Dills, has started a new podcast called Hard Edition. It's an old college radio show that he used to host about 15 years ago at San Francisco State. So we're rebranding the show, bringing it back from the dead. We did a test show last night. We just streamed it on Twitch. Next Tuesday night, we will stream it again. We don't plan on recording it. It'll be our first, like, official 000 show. And then the following week, the night before the inauguration, January 19th, we should be streaming again and actually record our first official podcast, 001. And just briefly, there's four of us that are going to be on the podcast from various backgrounds, and it's going to be fairly wide-ranging in topics, from general news to politics. I'm going to be heading up a science portion of it, and then we're going to play a bunch of games. It'll be like one of the guys on the podcast is 23 years old. I'm 47. So there's going to be a bit of a pop culture battle.
Oh, wow.
Right? So we're going to do stuff like that. We're going to have fun. It's going to be not safe for work. It's going to be just all, you know, it's going to be hilarious. It's going to be something that's not as niche as the Giants, because we know that this only applies to Giants fans. But if you like to hear talk about politics and news and science and pop culture and video games, and we have one guy who works in the fantasy sports industry, so he's going to bring his fantasy sports knowledge to the table. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So we don't have a website yet or anything like that, but the name is Hard Edition. If you remember those 90s shows, Hard Copy and Inside Edition.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's a hybrid of that, to be kind of cheesy. So anyway, look for that. I'll talk about it in the future. But if we don't record before then, that'll be out there. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun, something I'm looking forward to. But
I will definitely tune in. Sorry the motorcycle jumped on you at the end there.
No, actually, I didn't hear it. I just heard you go, whoa. And I was like, what? I thought something happened on the news. Because now we're all conditioned to that. Whoa, what's happening on the news? What's going on?
That's the truth.
What's the next car wreck? What's the train wreck coming here? Here we go. So, but yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything going on right now, Eric? I know you've been extremely busy. I got a lot of stuff going on with life and everything.
I think the only thing I have on the horizon is tuning into the first episode of Hard Edition.
All right. Woohoo. We have one listener. That'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. We ended up talking for like 3.5 hours last night on the stream. Again, not recorded, just random stuff from the day's events, what happened at the Capitol yesterday, 80s movies. So we went all over the board, and then a whole office trivia section. So it was great. It was a lot of fun. I will warn you, if you are not of the left-leaning liberal variety, you may not like portions of the podcast, but that's okay. You can fast forward through that, right? I think the four of us are definitely little left or very left of center. So just as a kind of a warning in case you're not of that disposition, which is fine. It's okay. But anyway, look forward to that. There's a lot of fun stuff we're going to be talking about. All right. Well, we'll be back at some point in the future. We don't know when, but thanks for listening to episode 212 of the TortureCast, and we'll be back at some point in the near future. Until then, and for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you then. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.